Hare Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Saha Viryankaravavahai Tejasvinavaditamastu Ma Vidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Viradhara Shivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Okay. Page 76. Thematic overview by Atmatattva. A. The personality of the absolute truth. Mantra 8 declares, such a person must factually know the greatest of all, the personality of Godhead, who is unembodied, omniscient, beyond reproach, without veins, pure, uncontaminated, the self-sufficient philosopher, and who has been fulfilling everyone's desire since time immemorial. The aim of all knowledge. Mantra 17, purport. The human body is highly developed and has full consciousness. According to the Bhagavad Gita 7:19, the most perfect man surrenders unto the Lord after many, many lifetimes of culturing knowledge. The culture of knowledge reaches perfection only when the knower comes to the point of surrendering unto the Supreme Lord, Vasudeva. Otherwise, even after attaining knowledge of one's spiritual identity, one does not come to the point of knowing that the living entities are eternal parts and parts of the whole and can never become the whole. One has to fall down again to the material atmosphere. Indeed, one must fall down, even if he has become one with the Brahma Jyoti. So when it says fully conscious, full consciousness, that means Krishna consciousness, right? Like that. It means any other thing is conscious, but it's not full. Because one can be conscious of many things, like animals are very conscious of so many things, but we won't say it's full consciousness, because it's only in connection with something in specific, with the, you know, connected with the senses, the sense objects, like this. So that's not what is established as the, you know, highest forms of consciousness. Because when you're dealing just with the senses, then that's considered the lowest consciousness. Right? That's just the senses meet the sense objects, you know, what you can perceive with the senses. That's considered the lowest level of consciousness. So interestingly enough, you know, the animal and the, you know, materialistic scientist, they're considered on the same level of consciousness, basically. You know? Because all they do is perceive through the senses. That's all. They can't do anything else. Higher is then when one can appreciate other living entities, you know, in means that you're worried about their senses. The same thing, but instead of being worried about oneself, one's worried about others, right? Then the third level will mean that one is able to appreciate the nature of the individual and their religious duties. Right. Fourth level would be to understand that we're not the body, but we are the soul. Right? So we're interested in freeing ourselves from the material entanglement. Right? Fifth level will mean that we're God conscious. Right. And even here, taking more, is that we're God conscious, but in a relationship with the Lord. Because we can be God conscious, and it says we know ourselves, means one can come to the transcendental platform, but unless that's connected to the Lord, then we will fall down. There's also someone being situated on the Brahman platform is considered on the fifth level of consciousness, but it's still not permanent. So you can't say that it is complete, you know, full. As we have heard from previous mantras, the Brahma Jyoti emanating from the transcendental body of the Lord is full of spiritual sparks that are individual entities that are the individual entities with this full sense of existence. Sometimes these living entities want to enjoy the senses, and therefore they are placed in the material world to become false lords under the dictation of the senses. The desire for lordship is the material disease of the living being. For under the spell of sense enjoyment, he transmigrates through the various bodies manifested in the material world. Becoming one with the Brahma Jyoti does not represent mature knowledge. Right here, what do you say? Full sense of existence, but it's not mature. Only by surrendering to the Lord completely and developing one's sense of spiritual service does one reach the highest perfectional stage. Right? So only if there's that complete surrender that comes to the platform of service, right, we can consider that as being mature. Right? Otherwise, it's not complete. So all knowledge then goes back to the Lord. Whatever there is, it has to come to that position. See, the futility of materialistic advancement. Mantra 10. The wise explained that one result is derived from the culture of knowledge, and that a different result is obtained from the culture of nescience. Purport. These 18 items combine to form a gradual process by which real knowledge can be developed. Except for these, all of the methods are considered to be in the category of nescience. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, a great acharya, maintained that all forms of material knowledge are merely external features of the illusory energy, and that by culturing them, one becomes no better than an ass. The same principle is found here in Sri Yukta. By advancement of material knowledge, modern man is simply being converted into an ass. Some materialistic politicians in spiritual guise decry the present system of civilization as satanic, but unfortunately they do not care about the culture of real knowledge, as it is described in the Bhagavad Gita. Thus they cannot change the satanic situation. Thus, Sri Ishupanishad very strongly words the culture of nescience is different from that of knowledge. The universities are, so to speak, centers of nescience only. Consequently, scientists are busy uncovering lethal weapons to wipe out the existence of other countries. University students today are not given instructions in the regulative principles of brahmacharya, celibate student life, nor do they have any faith in any scriptural injunctions. Religious principles are taught for the sake of name and fame only, not for the sake of practical action. Thus, there is animosity not only in social and political fields, but in the field of religion as well. Right. So what is connected to the Lord, that is spiritual. What's not is ignorance. Right. So this is a different perspective than we're used to. We're used to that cultivating anything with the intelligence, that's called knowledge, or that's called, you know, something higher. But here it's that if it's not connected to the Lord, it's not knowledge. Right? Well, it can be a very, here it's mentioning about becoming an ass. It can be a very sophisticated ass. But the point is it's still an ass, right? It's still, you know, it's good for carrying laundry or bricks or something like that. You know, because that's all the more. We use the intelligence, but as you pointed out, generally speaking, is that, you know, they're developing all kinds of nice weaponry, but they haven't figured out how to free one from birth, death, old age, and disease, right? But they know how to increase it, right? That they're quite good at. You know, it's just like to work out how to get rid of disease, that's very hard, but to work out how to create a disease that will kill people, that one they can do pretty good. You know what I'm saying? Let's see. Yes?
Can you say that since we have five level of consciousness, as we think. And we say there are similar type of knowledge with each level of consciousness.
Is there similar knowledge with each level? Yes, you can say that. Means, with anamoya, because you're dealing with the senses, that means then the level of knowledge is what you gain through your senses yourself. Right? Then for pranamoya, because you're dealing with others, then it's same knowledge, but it's what's gained from others. It's not transcendental, but what you hear from others, you know, like your gossip or any other material knowledge. The third level, that manomoy, that's what is the duty of the nature. So what that experience that you gain through being absorbed in the proper performance of duty, right, without focusing on the duty itself separately from the experience, that's the third level. Right? The example is given of someone is asleep. Then when they wake up, you can ask them, how did you sleep? And they can tell you. Even though technically when you're asleep, you're unconscious. Right? Oh, that's called aparoksha. Right? So the problem comes is that means aparoksha means you're dealing in the present. Right? So it's the mode of goodness. Because otherwise one's dealing in the future or the past. So when one's absorbed in the performance of your activity, then that knowledge gained from that, that's aparoksha. Right? But as soon as you focus on it, then you're seeing it separately than the experience. So you're not actually gaining that understanding anymore. Right? It means you're absorbed in the kirtan. You can appreciate the kirtan, but as soon as you start to think about how this is such a nice kirtan, you're not experiencing the kirtan anymore. So that quality of knowledge is no longer being gained. Does that make sense? So it's quite subtle, right? So that's the third level. So the fourth means is at hoksaja, where the Lord descends into, so to be able to perceive the Lord in everything, how He's pervading everything. Like that. So that's adhoksaja. So the Lord will descend there, then that adhoksaja is connected to Dharma. So technically speaking, down to the level of religious activities, religious principles, that's as far as the Lord actually enters. Right? So that means then your anamoy and pranamoy, that there, those aspects of knowledge, you have to connect that to the Lord. Your sense perception of what you've learned from others, that you have to connect to the Lord. But He doesn't enter into it. So the Lord will enter into religious duties and the understanding of the Brahman platform. But these others He won't. So that's why we're saying is that certain things you do, you don't, you know, you're not necessarily conscious of the Lord, but they still have that connection. But other things, if you don't connect it yourself, it's not connected. As long as you're connecting it, it's connected. As long as when it's not, it's not. So that means sense gratification, economics, justice, and morality. Only when you connect them, yourselves that are conscious of it, is it connected. As soon as you're not, it's not. But your religious duty, you're supposed to do that connected to the Lord. You may, in absorption, in performance of the duty, forget about the Lord. But because the intent is to do it for the Lord, it comes out that it's still connected at that time. Does that make sense? So that's why it said always the performance of your duty. Right? It doesn't say lower than that. The Lord doesn't comment lower than that. Because that, then you have to make the endeavor to connect it up. So there's a division there, yes. I'm saying he can, if one is practicing properly according to Shastra and everything, then he can even expand down to the third. Because that's the form of, that's dealing appropriately with what is perceivable on the level of adhoksaja. You know what I'm saying? But below that, you have to make the connection yourself. And then the fifth level is that the direct perception of the Lord. Does that make sense?
Yes. And so in that definition of nescience, it means the three first level.
Yes. Yeah, but that's why he goes and points out that in the previous ones, even on the Brahman platform, if it's not connected to the Lord, it'll still come down again. So even though it itself is not, means the Brahman platform is not nescience, but the problem is if someone's situated there without connection to the Lord, it will become nescience. So it's not actually nescience, but they will fall down. You know, so it's not a good situation. Yeah, when we're discussing that, we're meaning Bhava. Right? Because that's the actual neutral platform. Because another is, one can be on the Brahma-Bhuta platform, but technically if it's not a connection of the Lord, then the tendency is one won't stay there. So even though he may be on that platform experiencing no difficulty, he's not disturbed by duality, it's just a matter of time before he is. Does that make sense? So generally, the transcendental platform that's not in connection with the Lord, we tend to call that mukti. Yeah, it would be very easy. Yeah. Yes.
Can we assume this? Prabhupada spoke out that university students are not given instructions and have no faith. So can we see behind this the principle of lack of practice and lack of goal? They are just...
Well, also lack of identity. It means all three are missing. Because they don't know who they are, and unless you know who they are, how do they know where they're situated? Right? So you won't know what is the proper go, therefore you won't know what's the proper activity. So technically, they're only given the material skills to work with the world, and even that's only in certain subjects. You know what I'm saying? Medicine, your law, you know, some engineering. A few like this are actually directly connected to something practical. Most other topics aren't. Does that make sense? You know, it's something, a practical skill you can do, but otherwise, much of them aren't like that. Previously, the concept of the educational process was much more. It was cultural more. It was a basis. It created a common culture. In other words, anybody with a bachelor's degree had studied the same basic knowledge, fundamental knowledge, so they had a common culture. You know, in other words, what was seen as important within the application of use of the mind, right? How the mind would be cultured, how it would express, you know, through the logic and rhetoric, you know, grammar. So then one would be able to perceive and, in other words, one would be able to appreciate and communicate, you know, a thought, right? Like that. And then the mathematics level, then that would take care of any, you know, all understanding of the principles of interact, you know, movement, right? So your mathematical systems, your astrological and music. Right? So that was considered a basic. You were a gentleman, but in itself, it wasn't considered a separate skill. Those were just what every gentleman should know, right? Then you went on further to learn something practical. So you then it was medicine, law, or theology. Right? So you became a doctor, a lawyer, or a priest. Right? So doctor or lawyer if you're interested in money, and, you know, priest if you're interested in, you know, higher knowledge. Does that make sense? But now it's like you take these, what was before considered the trivia or the lower knowledge, and you can get a degree in that and consider it, you know. But otherwise, what do you do with it? You know what I'm saying? You know, what's its point? It means that the astrology on its own or math on its own was considered part of the culture, not a separate study. Does that make sense? You know, because you see, if someone, before the idea was you understand that much math that you are very much in tune with what you're dealing with, but not so much that you lose that connection. Because much of the time, those who focus only on math, they have, socially, they can't interact. That's because they're not also having studied your, you know, your logic, your rhetoric, your grammar. Right? Which the same mentality could easily learn. Right, so thus there is animosity not only in social and political fields, which is typical, but in the field of religion as well, because it's not actually being taught properly. Right? Religious principles taught for the sake of name and fame only. Like you can get it, you can just study. You can go and get a degree in some religious principles, comparative religion, and you can have degrees in, let's say, Christianity, but not be a priest. It's just an area of knowledge. You're interested in it. Right? You know, it's just so these things have gotten where they don't even practically apply. You could be a PhD in law, but not be a lawyer. You've just studied law very nicely, so it's just an academic subject. That's the difficulty. Well, before you studied law, you were a lawyer. You know what I'm saying? But they're different degrees. Right? Does that make sense? Right, you can have a Bachelor of Arts in Law, or you can be an LLB, right? You know? Does that make sense? So one can practice law, one can't. It's just, so it's been separated. It's not there, and then we're saying that's just on the quality of the material knowledge, and then it's not connected to the Lord. So the Veda concept is, since the world is the Lord, if you're learning any knowledge about the world, if you're not learning about the Lord at the same time, then it's nescience. Right? Because illusion means you don't see the Lord in what you're dealing with. Does that make sense? Mantra 11 purport. Since the creation of the material world, everyone has been trying to obtain a permanent life. But the laws of nature are so cruel that no one has been able to avoid the hand of death. No one wants to die, nor does anyone want to become old or diseased. The law of nature, however, does not allow anyone immunity from old age, disease, or death. Nor has the advancement of material knowledge solved these problems. Material science can discover the nuclear bomb to accelerate the process of death, but it cannot discover anything that can protect man from the cruel hands of old age, disease, and death. And it means that, you know, they may complain that, no, people live longer and all this and that, but I'm not sure that wasn't some time back. I think now people are, again, it's going down. You know, as they go into areas where people may have misfortune, so you improve the conditions so that they don't, you know, die from diseases when they're in their teens or 20s, then you add on to the overall, you know, human life is, you know, it's the average is higher. But the point is it's not like the quality of life in the older ages is really any better. Right? Yes.
There was a statistic quoted, I think, in the Bhagavatam, that the average lifespan, let's say 76, but you add into it all of the abortions, it comes down to about 53.
Oh.
And all the conceived women.
Wow. I think so. You're able to at least increase something, right? You know, like that. So that's the point, is this old age, you know, they can do plastic surgery and that, but you're still old. You know, it's just that you don't look as old, you know, like that, you know. And death, they haven't figured that one out at all. They've made no inroads into getting rid of death, yes.
Another problem is also that they are relating to the medieval age of Europe when they're saying what was the age, the general age of the population. Even in the Western world, that is considered the dark age.
Yes, that's true. I mean, they're not taking, like, you know, how are the Greeks and Romans doing? I mean, it depends. If you worked in the Senate, then your lifespan might be shorter than some other, you know, areas and stuff like that. But otherwise, yeah, they're not looking. Because the amazing thing is the people who live the longest on the planet aren't in the Western world. They're always in some, you know, remote little village somewhere where they live a very, you know, more natural and regulated lifestyle. You know, and so they've always been living that long. You know, I remember we had a headmaster here at one point. It was a particular group of a particular community in India that lived very long, and he was born when his father was 80 years old, like that. And he remembers seeing his grandfather when he was young, who was 120, you know. So he, when he joined the school, he was in his 70s. I forget 70 what, but like 73 or 75, right? And he still, like, sported a Fu Manchu mustache, you know, that he was still, you know, quite young and, you know, like that, you know. And most people are, you know, checking out the varieties of wheelchairs. He was still, you know, like that, you know. So it's very, very active. So it's just they've always been like that. Aggravation of the material disease is no sign of knowledge, but a sign of avidya, ignorance. For good health, a person should not increase his fever from 105 degrees to 107 degrees, but should reduce his temperature to the normal 98.6. That should be the aim of human life. The modern trend of material civilization is to increase the temperature of the feverish material condition, which has reached the point of 107 degrees in the form of atomic energy. Meanwhile, the foolish politicians are crying that at any moment the world may go to hell. That is the result of the advancement of material knowledge, the neglect of the most important part of life, the culture of spiritual knowledge. Sri Upanishad herein warns that we must not follow this dangerous path leading to death. On the contrary, we must develop the culture of spiritual knowledge so we may become completely free from the cruel hands of death. So the culture is there, is that the passion is increased, so we are increasing the temperature. And we consider that if the passion is increased, there's more life, there's more quality of life, so therefore it's better. The problem is, it's just, you know, disease, old age, and death somehow or another don't become reduced by increasing the mode of passion. Right? Also, it somehow or another doesn't have much at reducing the problem of birth either. It seems to be quite creative in that way. Okay, D, the oneness and difference of Bhagavan and the Jivas. Mantra 5 purport. The fact is that there is nothing but God within and without. Everything is a manifestation of his different energies, like the heat and light emanating from a fire. And in this way, there is oneness among his diverse energies. Although there is oneness, however, the Lord in his personal form still enjoys unlimitedly all the pleasures enjoyed minutely by the tiny part and parcel living entities. So this point is that he is everything, so therefore he's the greatest enjoyer, but his enjoyment is still separate from the living entities that are his parts and parcels. Right? So this was the point this morning that was not appreciated. Because we're looking at it as one or the other. So we're saying achinta beta beta tattva, but we're actually saying dwait advait. You know? So that's the difficulty. Mantra 7, purport. Except for the Madhyamadhikari and the Uttamadhikari discussed above, no one can correctly see the spiritual position of a living entity, of a living being. The living entities are qualitatively one with the Supreme Lord, just as the sparks of a fire are qualitatively one with the fire. Yet sparks are not fire as far as quantity is concerned. For the quantity of heat and light present in the sparks is not equal to that in fire. The Mahabhagavata, the great devotee, sees oneness in the sense that he sees everything as the energy of the Supreme Lord. Since there is no difference between energy and energetic, there is the sense of oneness. Although from the analytical point of view, heat and light are different from the fire, there is no meaning to the word fire without heat and light. They just come together. So the Lord and his creation, his energies, like this, they're non-different. Otherwise, what's the meaning of God if he's not the creator, if he's not all-pervading, he's not the supreme? Right? So they go together. So there is a difference, but at the same time, there's a oneness. In synthesis, therefore, heat, light, and fire are the same. Right, so now he's given the whole thing there, he's come a circle, now he's just putting them all together. Right here, so synthesis, he was again referring to the process of Panchanga Nyaya, right? So in the fourth stage, now he's brought them all together. In this mantra, the words ekatvam anupashyata indicate that one should see the unity of all living entities from the viewpoint of the revealed scriptures. The individual sparks of the Supreme Whole, the Lord, possesses almost 80% of the known qualities of the whole. But they are not quantitatively equal to the Supreme Lord. These qualities are present in minute quantity, for the living entity is but a minute part and parcel of the Supreme Whole. To use another example, the quantity of salt present in a drop is never comparable to the quantity of salt present in the complete ocean. But the salt present in the drop is qualitatively equal in chemical composition to all the salt present in the ocean. If the individual living being were equal to the Supreme Lord, both qualitatively and quantitatively, there would be no question of his being under the influence of material nature. Like his material nature is a portion of the Lord's energy. So how would you be under? If you're the complete whole, then you can't be under the control of a part. Right? Because you're greater than the part. You're the source of the part. Right? In the previous mantra, it has already been discussed that no living being, not even the powerful demigods, can surpass the Supreme Being in any respect. Therefore, ekatvam does not mean that a living being is equal in all respects to the Supreme Lord. You know, so he's saying that the one comes from seeing that the Lord and his energies are non-different. So since his energies are everywhere, everything is his energy, therefore there's the non-difference. It does, however, indicate that in a broader sense there is one interest, just as in a family the interest of all the members is one, or in a nation the national interest is one, although there are many different individual citizens. Since the living entities are all members of the same supreme family, their interest and that of the supreme being are not different. Every living being is the son of the supreme being, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita 7.5. All living creatures throughout the universe, including birds, reptiles, ants, aquatic trees, and so on, are emanations of the marginal potency of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, all of them belong to the family of the Supreme Being. There is no clash of interest. So, the Lord and his energies are non-different, but they're different. At the same time, as then there's the interest, that also you can find that there can be oneness. Right? So, when that interest is the same, then that appreciation of the oneness and difference of the Lord have no problem. One can see them both simultaneously, and one can function properly. But if the interest is not the same as the Lord, one either doesn't see the Lord, or sees him but thinks one is equal to. Right? Does that make sense? So then that's all considered material consciousness. So if the interest is right, that's spiritual consciousness. The destination of different kinds of worshippers. 1 to 12. Those who engage in the worship of the demigods enter into the darkest region of ignorance, and still more so do the worshippers of the impersonal absolute. Purport. In the Bhagavad Gita, 7:20-23, it is said that only unintelligent, bewildered persons, driven by a strong desire for sense gratification, worship the demigods for the temporary relief of temporary problems. Since a living being is materially entangled, he has to be relieved from material bondage entirely to attain permanent relief on the spiritual plane, where eternal bliss, life, and knowledge exist. Sri Upanishad therefore instructs that we should not seek temporary relief of our difficulties by worshipping the dependent demigods, who can bestow only temporary benefit. Rather, we must worship the Absolute Personality of Godhead, Krishna, who is all-attractive and who can bestow upon us complete freedom from material bondage by taking us back home, back to Godhead. The problems of life cannot be solved simply by going to the moon planet or some other planet above or below it. Therefore, Sri Upanishad advises us not to bother with any destination within this dark material universe, but try to get out of it and reach the effulgent kingdom of God. So, here we're understanding is that one is trying to be happy by removing a problem, right? We generally look at it in a positive sense, but happiness is defined by removal of pain. Right? There's some problem that one has, so by removing that obstacle, then we call that happiness, right? You know, there's an obstacle between, you know, we're feeling hungry, so you remove the hunger, you're happy, you're tired, you remove the tiredness, you're happy, right? So the point is by approaching the demigods, you're trying to remove an obstacle that's there. You don't have money, you don't have power, position, or health, or something. So you're worshiping the demigods, so you're trying to remove the problem. So that will always be temporary. Only by worship of the Supreme Lord can we actually remove all the problems by going back home, back to God. Right? Anything else is not going to remove the problems. Right? You know, we, in our conditioning, have put it that this, you know, striving after happiness is a positive direction. We don't see that it's actually a removal of negative. Right? Because if it was positive, the negative can remain. It's positive. But you have to get rid of the negative, then we call it positive. Right? But if you have -5 and you remove -5, what do you have? Zero. Right? So it's not positive. That's the difficulty. But technically, you know, you can have -5 and +5 at the same time. It's not a problem. They're two different things. But we'll only say, so no, it's only just one thing. There are many pseudo-worshippers who become religionists only for the sake of name and fame. Such pseudo-religionists do not wish to get out of this universe and reach the spiritual sky. They only want to maintain the status quo in the material world under the garb of worshipping the Lord. The atheist and impersonalist leads such foolish pseudo-religionists into the darkest regions by preaching the cult of atheism. Right, so people are following religious principles only because it will improve the material situation. So, in other words, the pseudo-religionists, we call them pious people. Right? Because they're only following religion because of the material benefit that will be gained from it. So it's not real religion is to take one's nature and engage it in the Supreme Lord. That's actual religion, Sanatana Dharma. The other means it's not, it's, you know, asanatana dharma, right? It's the opposite. It's impermanent religious principle. So such persons are pseudo-religionists, and they get, deviated from that by the atheists and impersonalists who lead them into the darkest regions. Right? So here, the atheists and the impersonalists. So when we're saying here the atheists and the impersonalists, who are we talking about? Yes, the Buddhists and the Mayavadis. So in other words, the Buddhists and Mayavadi philosophers, they distract the pious people. Right? Shall we? No, they're the pseudo-religionists. You could say is that they're, see, it's like you have the people that they're very pious, right? So then it would take some, you know, some decent philosophical basis that seems to be presented in the cloak of, you know, religion and philosophy to distract them, because they are pious. Does that make sense? No. Here, you're mixing here. Is that we're talking about here? You take the religionists, the pseudo-religionists, who are following religion for material purpose. That's why it's called pseudo. It's not that they're not practicing the religious principles properly, but they're practicing it for the purpose of, you know, economic development, sense gratification, like this. Does that make sense? So that's a pseudo-religionist. They're using it, but not properly. You know what I'm saying? So, it's just like, let's say you had somebody who goes into the kitchen and very expertly prepares the preparation, but their purpose of preparing the preparation was to take it and throw it on their canvas. Like that. Would we call them a cook? Not really. You know what I'm saying? So the point is, someone who follows religion, but it's not to please the Supreme Person of the Godhead, then they're not actual religionists. You know, so when we say pseudo-religion, it doesn't mean that they're bogus in following of the religious principles. They may be very, what we call religious. That's why I said, they're the pious people. And those pious people, then the Mayavad and the Buddhism then appear to be presented in a pious fashion that the pious person could relate to. So they get distracted by that. So it's even worse. So those who are engaged in the worship of the demigods enter into the darkest region, but still more so do the worshippers of the impersonal absolute. So those who don't worship that personal aspect, then they're even in the worst position. So those pious persons who are atheists or impersonalists, they're worse than just being that pious person. Right? Does that make sense? Is that abominable? Yeah, you could say that, but I'm saying basically it depends how far you want to take it. Is that you have the definition that karma is abominable, but jnana is okay, or you take it that devotional service is okay and karma and jnana are abominable. So it's just a matter of how exact you're making the definition, you know, like that. So, does that make sense? Because gyan then can be useful in that by understanding the absolute, then we can come take that step further. So in that way, it's not seen as so bad. But technically, if it's not seen in connection with the Lord, then it's just as bad, or in this case, it's worse. Does that make sense? So, I'm not sure if you understood. Did you catch the inference of the answer to your question? The same doubt, but the point is we're taught here, he's giving an example that you require a very nicely situated Mayavadi or Buddhist to distract a religious person. So if they're not religious, they're already distracted, right? And so, therefore, it doesn't take a whole lot of philosophy to do that. You know what I'm saying? That's my point. So, but it's the same thing. They're still distracted by the same thing. They're simply interested in sense gratification, but they're not religious enough to take up the pseudo-religionist, you know, platform. So they just go after by their own mental speculation. So then they're actually in a worse position on one level. You know, on another is that they're not wrongly practicing religion, so if they do take it up, then they can be trained what's real religion, and they can make a distinction. But because they have a tendency towards not being pious, then that's always the weakness. On a bad hair day, then they're, you know, sinfully inclined. Does that make sense? Like that. And, you know, it doesn't take a whole lot of Buddhism or impersonalism to keep them busy. You know what I'm saying? The atheist directly denies the existence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the impersonalists support the atheist by stressing the impersonal aspect of the Supreme Lord. So they're supporting, so it's actually, that's why we say it's one topic, right? The atheism is that, one, you can do it through the Shastra and only focus on the impersonal aspect, but the impersonal without the personal is atheistic. Right? Because the personal and the personal and the impersonal go together. They're not separate. Right? The Supreme Lord is all, when we say He's all pervading, omniscient, that's the impersonal aspect. But it's, He is omnipresent and omnipotent. The person is omnipotent. Right? So they go together. That's why the example of the sparks, the light and heat are non-different from the fire. So light and heat are generic, but they're inherently part of the fire. Right? So the impersonal is always inherently part of the personal. You say, oh, he's so kind. What does that mean? Kind is a generic thing. It's not personal. Right? You know, if you come up to me and I say, you come up and then I say, kindness. It's kind of like, yeah. So, are you going to apply this kind? So you have to apply the quality into a dynamic situation, right? Then it becomes personal. Does that make sense? So the Lord is the embodiment of mercy. That's the impersonal aspect. But depending upon how the devotee surrenders to Him, then it becomes person. That's one, then it's manifest according to the relationship between God and the living entity. So God's a person, the living entity's a person, but the basis of interaction, all those elements, those are impersonal until they're applied. Right? And the persons themselves have simultaneously the impersonal quality that is not manifest. Right? The big strong man is sitting in a chair. He's strong. But until he applies it, it's not manifest. But it's non-different. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is the difference and non-difference between the Lord and His energies. So that's the point. So we'll see that oneness is there, but the oneness is the oneness of the person. Right? It's not the emphasis is on the oneness of the absolute. That's making a mistake, because the greater position is the person. Yes. The demigods are conscious of Krishna.
They want to gratify their senses, but they are conscious that Krishna, as you stated, like...
No, well, generally they're two different things. You know what I'm saying? The ones that are always conscious of Krishna, when they're engaging the senses, aren't the ones that are into sense gratification, like Lord Shiva, Narad Muni, Brahma, like this, then they are both. But most of the others are conscious of their sense gratification. When that doesn't work out, then they become conscious of the Supreme. Is that it's not dealing with the material. We're talking, Brahma Jyoti is, when you're referring to the Brahma Jyoti, you're referring to what? A place, a situation, right? So in other words, being transcendentally situated for the living entity, would that be considered better than being materially situated? You know, the living entity is in an environment of illusion and duality, or the living entity is in the platform of understanding who he is as the soul, which is higher. Right? You understand? But the problem is their mentality of situating themselves there. Then that becomes a difficulty, because if it's atheistic, then how will they progress to understand the highest platform, which is the Supreme Person?
But for them also it will be easy. They have connection.
For demigods, the problem is that it's just like this. Where do you say you live? Where do you go from here?
Hyderabad.
Okay. So, right there in the middle of town, you know, where all the malls are happening and the discotheques and this and that, when everything's going good, is anybody conscious of God? Right? No, but if they're sitting at their house, you know, where it's just a regulated environment, or something goes wrong, that's when they remember. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So the heavenly planets, the facilities are a little better. So what's going to be the normal state? Not remembering. They'll be absorbed in the material facility. But what makes them sura is that if something goes wrong in that state, they remember the Lord. While asura, something goes wrong, they simply make a new plan. That's all. Okay? So that means the avant-garde ending to movies was actually demoniac. Okay. The ignorant pseudo-religionists and the manufacturers of so-called incarnations, who directly violate the Vedic injunctions, are liable to enter into the darkest region of the universe because they mislead those who follow them. Right? So that's the point. They're into the darkest region. In other words, you yourself don't understand what's going on. You will go into the darkest region. But if you are misleading others, right, through your particular, then that goes to the dark, that goes to the you know, absolute darkest regions. Does that make sense? So that's worse. You're following it wrong. That's bad. But you're encouraging others to follow it wrong. That's worse. Right? Directions for achieving actual success in life. Do we understand? So there's a gradation there. So the person who doesn't practice properly is bad, but the person who preaches that not practicing properly is good, they're worse.
Supporting people who are saying.
Yeah, it's the same. The person who supports, as Preetu Maharaj said, the person who supports, the person who does, and the person who
allows,
or is the authority for. Like that, then all of them get the same benefit.
Instructor, supporter, and doer.
Yes, instructor, supporter, and doer. Like that. So that's why in the Vedic system there's a differentiation made in the position of someone. Nowadays it's just, oh, but he feels like it, and he's just trying to, do what he thinks is right. Or you make no distinction between these aspects, because the idea is to go darker and darker, right? So therefore, you can't make these distinctions.
Yeah, we see that many modern scientists are supporting the idea to atheism, personalism.
Right, here, the atheist directly denies the existence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So they can just be doing that very nicely, spontaneously, or have an actual, like, philosophy or a religion. But the point is it's just, it's the same thing. You know, it's just the Buddhist, there's a method to deal with it. But, you know, the modern science, there's not, because they just don't want there to be any. You know, you're Buddhist and you're impersonalist, they come to that platform because a study or a culture. But this other one is just, they don't like the idea. Does that make sense? So it's the same thing, but it's not so developed. It's on a more meager platform. But their commitment to it can be just as great. You know? That's what we're saying before, is that when one gives examples, generally speaking, on these things, one only has to really talk about the you know, specifically the direct or indirect followers of the Vedic culture. One doesn't have to get into your common examples so much, because that already is automatically an illusion. You know what I'm saying? Because your common person is just an illusion. It's your persons who are outstanding in illusion that you discuss. Because they're the ones leading the others into illusion. Does that make sense? F. Directions for achieving actual success in life. Introduction. This Krishna consciousness movement is completely authorized from Vedic principles. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, the actual aim of Vedic research is to find out Krishna. And if you want to search out Krishna by studying the Vedic literature, then you will be baffled. It may be possible, but it is very difficult. But you can very easily learn about him from his devotee. His devotee can deliver him to you. Here he is, take him. That is the potency of Krishna's devotees. Right, so if you, Krishna consciousness movement is completely authorized from Vedic principles. That means Prabhupada didn't make anything up. Right? Sometimes devotees try to say, oh, well, he created his own thing. So since he created his own thing, we can therefore create our own thing. You know, which is interesting, right? Is the same person to say we can create our own thing, the same ones, but that means you're equating yourself to the position that Prabhupada's in. At the same time, is none of their god brothers can actually get to that spiritual platform. They're all just, you know, conditioned by the material energy. You understand the delusion here? Like that. Very interesting. So it's completely authorized. The detail of how you apply it, that may be unique for the situation. But the principle is exactly, you know, founded in the... And here, the actual aim of Vedic research is to find out Krishna. So research means you find Krishna. That's the point. Research doesn't mean something else, right? That's not research. Right? If you want to search out by studying the Vedic literature, you will be baffled, right? Because these Vedic literatures are written by great personalities who understood the Vedic principle, represented God, how he's present in the universe. Right? That was the discussion before. And so therefore we call it by that branch of knowledge. But they're only discussing the Lord in terms of that particular topic. Right? So if you try to find out God from studying those literatures, then, basically speaking, you will be baffled. You know? Not that it's impossible, but you'll be baffled. So, therefore, Prabhupada wasn't too keen on the word research. Devotees used to like to say, yes, we'll research this. Prabhupada says, what you'll research? Right? The Goswamis, they've researched. Right? We simply follow in their footsteps. so he never was too appreciative. Because it's we'll research and we'll find it out ourselves. How you'll find it out? You have to find out from authorities, right? It's very difficult, but you can easily learn from the devotees. So learning from the devotees, then when one studies something, one will be able to see Krishna. But to look at it oneself, then that may not work so well. Does that make sense? Once one's trained, then one can look at anything and see its connection to the Lord. Right? But before that, then... Does that make sense? Mantra 10, purport. The material body and mind are bad bargains for the spiritual living entity. Both. The living entity has actual functions in the living spiritual world. But this material world is dead. As long as the living spiritual sparks manipulate the dead lumps of matter, the dead world appears to be a living world. One has spiritual functions, but one is not. One is functioning within the dead matter. So it appears the dead matter is alive because it moves around, you know. Like a robot moves, so then we conjecture life and all that, and then, you know, they have their own consciousness and all these different things. And does that make sense? You know. So that's the point, but it's still dead matter. Right? Like that. Actually, it is the living souls, the parts and parcels of the supreme living being, who move the world. The dhyanis have come to know all these facts by learning them from superior authorities, and have realized this knowledge by following the regulative principles. Right? So hearing from the authority, you're following the regulative principles of, you know, of sadhana and of spiritual life. And so that's how they come to know all these things. Right? As we said before, you're going to study on your own, very difficult. But you study according to authority, very easy. Right? And adhira, one who has not undergone the training of adhira. Right? Problem with English, right? Cannot be an instructive leader. Right? It means they wouldn't be able to guide you. Modern politicians who pose themselves as dhyanis are actually adhyanis, and one cannot expect perfect knowledge from them. They are simply busy seeing to their own remuneration in dollars and cents. How then can they lead the mass of people to the right path of self-realization? Thus one must hear submissively from a dhyana in order to attain actual education. So you can't hear from adhyanis, but you should hear from adhira. English is so annoying in that one way, right? So here is that, yeah. Yeah. So one who's heard from authorities and has practiced it, they can be a leader, right? Someone who has a skill is not a leader, right? G, stages of God realization. In the purport to the invocation, it is stated, the complete whole, or the supreme absolute truth, is the complete personality of Godhead. Realization of impersonal Brahman, or Paramatma, the supersoul, is incomplete realization of the absolute complete. The supreme personality of Godhead is Satchitananda Vigraha, Brahma Samhita 5.1. Realization of impersonal Brahman is realization of a sat feature, or his aspect of eternity. And Paramatma realization is realization of a sat and chit features, right? Because chit functions on sat, right? You perform activity based on your knowledge of the field. Does that make sense? So when we say chit, it means sat and chit, right? But it's functioning at the level of chit, so we call it chit. Ananda means you only get the result because chit has there based on the knowledge. So ananda means chit and ananda. Right? Does that make sense? So we're studying sambandha abhideya prayojana. Right? Then abhideya means it's based on the knowledge of sambandha, and prayojana means it's based on the activities performed you know, in knowledge. Does that make sense? So that's why sometimes it becomes confusing because they all seem like they're connected because they are. Like that, you know? Sat can exist on its own. Yes, that's why only Krishna can do that. He is existence. So he can just exist and be perfectly satisfied. Right? It means Chit-Ananda there, but his existence is all that we are appreciating. But he's Atmarama. So we're not manifest, because he's not interacting with his energies. So we can only appreciate when all three work together. Because for Krishna, it's just, you know, he's active or he's not active. You know what I'm saying? Is that okay?
Can we say that Sambandha also includes all of them?
Yes, Sambandha includes all of them.
So number...
Yes. Because that's why you see in the introduction to the Gita, when it's explaining all the topics that are there, the six topics, that the first four are sambandha, jnana, but it includes all the aspects of sambandha, avideya, and prayojana. So the knowledge of avideya, the knowledge of prayojana, like that's part of sambandha, jnana. Because unless you have that knowledge, how you'll be inspired and therefore have the need. Because having the need, how do you have a need if you don't know what you need? Right? You wake up in the morning, I have this need. So what do you need? I don't know, I just need. You know, like that. It's kind of like, are you okay? Yes, yes, I'm so inspired. I need. You know, like that. You know, so it's not going to work yet.
This is good for the intellectuals. Movie or poetry.
Yeah, yeah. You could even have a seminar. We all get there and just feel that we need, you know, like that. Yeah. Yeah, it would be. So, the... you know, your question would be, you know, whether you want to go mainstream or go art house. And it's in this, so that would be... Yes, that's the point. That brings that clarifies her point. Is that the sat includes sat chit and ananda, like that in that respect. But it's not dynamic. So when we're saying chit and ananda, then we're meaning the dynamic, you know, conscious endeavor and experience. While the other is just that existence. Then there's a pleasure. Just like when one is sleeping, then there's a particular pleasure in it. You know, but as soon as there's that conscious endeavor and a distinction, then it's lost. You know, so that's why what they're looking for, basically, your Buddhists and your Maya bodies are just a really good sleep. No distractions, no babies crying, no phones ringing. You don't have to go to work, you know, nothing to do. You know, like that. You know, you don't have to go to the toilet. You know, it's just, you know. Shushupti, yeah, deep sleep. Yeah, because swapna means there's activity and all that. So, yeah. But that's what they're looking for. You know. You could probably start a whole thing on just... What people need nowadays is just a good nap, you know. You know, so how to take the perfect nap, you know. So you have seminars on it and everything. Practice, right, you know.
What kind of field?
Yeah, that's the funny thing, right? The poor guy actually can do it, right? It's anyone above him has the problem, right? You've written a book.
I read
a book.
Already on the market.
On the market, okay. So all you need is a good nap. Okay.
successful life.
Keep a successful life. Good nap. Right? And that's the effort. Yeah. Yeah, sleep your way to success. That a lot of people would like that. Some people are very advanced. But realization of the personality of Godhead is realization of all the transcendental features, Satchit and Ananda, bliss. When one realizes the Supreme Person, he realizes these aspects of the Absolute Truth in their completeness. Okay, so then we'll continue. We're almost. How are we doing on the Gita? We can. You got a point there. Okay. That's right here. Okay. That's after. When I finish all these, then we'll do Bhagavad Gita. Because then you'll be prepared for the great depth of. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Chaitanya Gaurav Vrindavan ki.